Please call the case.
Case number SCWC-13-428, In Re Gentry Revocable Trust, arguing for petitioner, Marjorie S. Bronster, also appearing for petitioner, J.B. Park. Arguing for respondent, Alan T. Yoshitake, also appearing for respondent, Carol S. Taylor. Argument on the merits.
All right. Good morning, Ms. Bronster, Mr. Yoshitake. Are you both ready to proceed today?
We are.
Mr. Yoshitake. Now, my understanding is, Ms. Bronster, you provided the court with a document from the sealed portion of the record, docket number 84, page 589, and we've been provided that so the court can refer to it during the argument. But again, this is under seal, and as my understanding is, it's under seal, and there is no objection from the respondents to this. All right. With that, then, we'll begin. Ms. Bronster, you have reserved 12 minutes for rebuttal, so we'll let you know when you get to that point in your argument, and Mr. Yoshitake will give you a warning with 5 minutes left to go in your argument. Very well. Ms. Bronster.
Thank you, Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court. I represent Kiana Gentry here today in the appeal, along with Jay Park, and Kiana Gentry is here in the courtroom. And I will explain why the ICA was wrong in dismissing the appeal as moot. I will also explain why the collateral attack doctrine does not apply in this matter, and why the relief requested is not moot. But in order to do so, I would like to take a couple of moments to put into context what this appeal is and is not about. As with many a probate court matter, this is an appeal of a single petition within a much larger probate case. So we have dozens of petitions within the matter of Thomas H. Gentry Revocable Trust.
Is it the practice of the probate court to issue separate judgments on every petition?
No, it is not.
Why in this case are there two judgments?
I believe that was requested by the co-trustees, and what the court did under the probate rule was he did certify them in a certification akin to Rule 54B.
Was there a separate request for such a certification, or was, I noticed that there's handwriting.
No, there was, as far as I can recall, there was not.
So the probate court just routinely includes that type of, it's not routine because we've had a lot of decisions and judgments that do not have that language.
That's
so.
Correct.
Therefore, the probate court inserted that certification language without request.
We did not request it, and in reviewing the record, I did not see a request by the co-trustees.
So separate judgments would require separate notices of appeal, assuming these are separate judgments that need to be, and require separate fees for each notice of appeal.
Yes.
While you're on that, Ms. Bronster, could you help me understand the subject matter generally of these two judgments? You have a judgment that pertains to the petition for enforcement and instructions, and then you have your petition for enforcement. Would you say that the subject matter that both judgments concern are pretty much the same?
No, we would not. And we would say that the judgment and the subject matter of the Kiana's petition, which was the petition for enforcement, is far broader than the petition sought by the co-trustees, the petition for instructions.
Would it include the subject matter of the co-trustees' petition?
We actually do not believe they're inconsistent, and I will get to that in a moment. But basically, Kiana's petition arose out of decades-long litigation. I mean, the trust was created, and in 2007, there was finally a trial over the funding of the subtrusts, the handling of the trusts, and the failure to administer the trust properly. There had been a decade's worth of accountings that had been submitted at once, and it culminated in a trial before Judge Hefo. And mid-trial, we ended up in a settlement conference with all parties, including the co-trustees, all beneficiaries, and it culminated in a settlement which had certain provisions that had 30 months to take effect. And that settlement was all the subject of Kiana's enforcement petition.
And it sounds like the core issue in your in these two judgments that you're concerned about is whether or not the assets should be liquidated.
No, actually, that was not the core of Kiana's petition. And if you look back originally at Kiana's petition asked for not only the issues relating to potential sale, but also for an orderly disposition of the entire trust. The settlement agreement went well beyond handling of individual assets, and it requested, Kiana requested, that the court on documents, docket entry 70, paragraph 56, page 308, we ask that the court should order that the necessary steps be taken to effectuate a complete administration of the revocable and marital trusts pursuant to the terms of the settlement agreement. And in conclusion, on page 310, we asked that the court enforce the settlement agreement and order the co-trustees to effectuate the terms of the settlement agreement as it pertains to the administration of the revocable in trust.
Wasn't the key issue whether the assets were going to be liquidated or not before the matter was before they were distributed?
That was one of the issues. But I have something that I have to bring to the court's attention, and I think it's important that we focus on this. If you will take a look at the document that I handed you, which is page 589 of docket 84, this is out of one of the co-trustees' supplemental pleadings given to the probate court. And as you can see on paragraph 7, it says the combined assets of the trust, the marital trust, and the estate identified in the settlement agreement are as follows. So what they were talking about was the overlap between the settlement agreement and the petition. The only overlap were, with respect to the trust, were these two entities, Gentry Pacific Limited and Gentry Properties. Now, this petition and this proceeding before you today is not about the marital trust, and it's not about the estate. But what Kiana asked for was that these assets be handled according to the terms of the settlement agreement.
These under 7, paragraph
That's
7.
Correct. And if you look at paragraph 8, they go into detail about the various entities and their ownership interests in paragraph 8. But what the co-trustees did not tell the probate court, and what the co-trustees did not tell the ICA, and what I feel is necessary for me to tell you, is that the Gentry Properties assets, starting at the bottom with Gentry Pacific Design Center, was sold, not distributed, it was sold by the trustees before the probate court entered its order.
But isn't that the only one that actually correlates to shares? That's the only one that actually specifies in Exhibit A shares.
And that's correct. That's the only issue, and the trustees sold it. I would ask the court, and I know at this late point, but I would ask the court to take judicial notice of the sale of Gentry Pacific Design Center and the liquidation of GPP LLC, GPP Corp, and Gentry Properties, all prior to the entry of the order and the judgment.
And what is the significance of that in your view?
The significance of that is, number one, the trustees are taking the position that they couldn't sell it under the terms of the order, and it's simply not true. They had already sold it when the order and judgment were entered.
Now, did you raise that to the ICA?
No, we did not, Your Honor.
Why not?
Your Honor, I had not focused on this, but I believe that because this was an action that the co-trustees took, and the co-trustees had a fiduciary duty to the beneficiaries and to the court, that they should have disclosed it to the ICA. And had the ICA known that this sale had already taken place and there was therefore no conflict between the distribution order and the petition to enforce the agreement, the ICA, I believe, would never have decided it was a collateral attack and never would have decided it was moot.
So just to be clear on your position is that all of the assets that are at issue here have already been liquidated? Is that your position? Or were already liquidated even before the judgment was entered?
All of the assets that could potentially give rise to a conflict with Kiana's petition for enforcement.
Why don't you explain? There's a nuance there I'm detecting. Why don't you tell me what the nuance is?
Okay. The nuance is that in the settlement agreement itself, Gentry Properties was supposed to have been sold. But Gentry Pacific Limited was subject to additional issues. They said that once that certain assets within Gentry Pacific were to be distributed in kind, that's been done. And that's not at issue, and it's not in conflict with the distribution order. And it also provides, the settlement agreement also provides, that the Gentry Pacific, whatever cash is in the Gentry Pacific, was supposed to be distributed out to the beneficiaries as a dividend. That has not been done, and that is something that Kiana Gentry's petition sought, that once the assets were dealt with, that they were supposed to be distributed, that there were supposed to be accountings, that there were a lot of other things other than this one issue. Now, I believe that the co-trustees tried to make Kiana's petition only about a sale of assets, which it wasn't. It was far broader than that. It was an attempt to hold the co-trustees to their obligations under the entirety of the settlement agreement. So even if these assets hadn't been sold, we believe that there still would have been continuing validity to Kiana's appeal.
And you're saying that under the terms of the trust, once the assets were sold, the cash was supposed to be distributed, and to this day you're saying that it hasn't been distributed?
That's correct.
Why hasn't it been distributed? Because of the appeal?
I don't know. The settlement agreement also required certain other things, like periodic meetings, where the trustees would continue to give us information. We have not had any in years. There have been...
I'm sorry, was that raised to the ICA? These issues, again, I'm trying to focus on whether they have not been raised previously on appeal to the ICA, correct?
Well,
or to us?
The arguments that we're making now are focusing on issues relating to things that came up in the ICA. When the ICA raised the collateral attack doctrine that had not been briefed previously, the co-trustees mentioned it in an offhand comment, but we were never given an opportunity to brief it or argue it.
But the issue of mootness was raised before the ICA.
That's correct, and we argued that it wasn't moot because our petition was far broader than simply the disposition of these two assets.
I thought you argued it wasn't moot because the assets could be if the assets were sold, they could then be sold or distributed pursuant to the agreement. So it was, in fact, consistent with the other judgment.
That's
was
correct.
The gist of your argument. And their reaction, their response is, no, we're supposed to distribute assets, not cash. So their position was there was a conflict.
Right, but factually there was no conflict because they had already sold that asset.
Why would they raise this as a conflict if they had already sold it?
I don't know.
Looking at your petition to enforce settlement agreement, it appears that in addition to these issues, you also requested removal of the co-trustees and appointment of a neutral receiver. Is that correct?
Yes, because the original litigation was a result of Tom Gentry's widow having to wait for years and years and years to get the money out of the trust. And so then we waited, we settled the case. We thought we had settled the case. We waited another 30 months pursuant to the settlement agreement, and they still didn't do what they were supposed to do, so we sought to enforce it.
But that portion of your request would not be moot in any event, would it, in terms of the request to remove the co-trustees and the request to appoint a receiver?
And
would that be moot?
To administer the trust pursuant to the terms of the agreement. Now, even if the one property had not been sold, if there was a conflict, Kiana's appeal would still have continuing validity, because if Kiana chose not to appeal it and accept that property put out, then there still would be responsibilities of the co-trustees and all of the parties to administer the trust and close it out finally.
Well, then what is the relief you're seeking now? If the property the Gentry properties have been liquidated, what relief are you looking for now?
What we're asking the court to do is to reverse the ICI. The ICI said that our petition is moot and we cannot seek to enforce the agreement. What we're asking this court to do is to reverse the ICA and to order the trustees to enforce the terms of the settlement.
Actually, the ICA did not reach the merits.
Yeah,
correct. So wouldn't we, if your request is granted, wouldn't the remedy be to remand to the ICA for consideration of the merits of your appeal?
I think you could do that, except for the fact that the trustees have admitted that the settlement agreement is enforceable.
Right. That hasn't been briefed. That hasn't been done. I think you're asking more than
what?
This case is here based on the mootness issue and the collateral attack. If you prevail, it goes back to the ICA.
And I think one opportunity would be to remand it to the ICA for a determination on the merits. As I said, the reason that I don't believe it is the only opportunity is because the co-trustees spend a tremendous amount of time saying that they have no problem with the settlement agreement. They believe it's valid and enforceable, but they believe that Kiana has no remedy because it's moot. And if the court throws out mootness, I think they've already conceded the merits. But I think that you can go either way.
Coming back to mootness, why did you not, or why did Ms. Gentry not appeal the judgment, the second judgment, with regard to the trustee's petition? Why did you not appeal that?
There were a couple of reasons. One of them was that the co-trustees, in their supplemental pleading, which I gave you one page of, and in other discussions, said they were going to sell the Gentry Pacific Design Center despite that judgment. So there was no need to, because that was the only inconsistency anyway, and they were planning on selling.
When did it sell? I heard you say previously that it sold before the judgment.
Yes, and we do have certified copies of the warranty deed, which was the sale. It was sold on August 20th of 2012. And then GPP was dissolved on October 18th, 2012, and Gentry Pacific Limited was terminated on November 19th, 2012.
Were these matters brought to the attention of the probate court? Because the relevant hearing in the probate court took place in October, took place in October of 2011, but the judgment wasn't entered until 2013.
That's correct. And it was not brought to the attention of the probate court. And I was unaware of these details. Certainly the co-trustees were aware because they were involved in doing these things.
You were unaware of the sale and the dissolution?
I was aware of the sale, but I was not aware of the details of all of this. And
so coming back to the question of why you didn't file an appeal, you thought you didn't need to file an appeal because the property had already been liquidated? Is that?
And we didn't, we thought, well, we knew that it was going to be liquidated. And I cannot remember what my knowledge was at the time it was appealed. But it was not the primary issue. Our primary issue was making sure this trust got closed after all of these years, to just get this enforced, to make sure that the trustees allowed us to end this. We settled it and tried to do so. I would like to submit the warranty deed and certified copies of the warranty deed and the dissolution documents and ask the court to take judicial notice of the same.
Well, you know, I think with regard to those matters are not in the record, correct?
Correct.
All right. So, you know, with regard to that issue, I think that'll be something that we would, if you wish to come before the court, you'll need to file something with us, and then we'll let the respondents respond. But at this point, I don't think the court is in a position to rule about your submission of them. So
we would like to the right to submit that after this hearing. There is a under the rules of evidence 201 and the Eli versus State case, we believe that it is appropriate to submit this at any time. And while
so you can make that argument, and whatever you're going to submit to us, and
thank
the respondents
you.
Can answer.
Thank you very much.
Point. Thank you.
And I would like to reserve any additional time.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court that my name is Alan Yoshitaka, and my co-counsel is Carol Taylor. We represent the respondents, the trustees of the Thomas Gentry Rev Trust, with Mark Borsett and First Wine Bank as co-trustees. I'd like to place this entire administration in context for you, because it is a bit complex and has been a long-standing administration. In 2010, appellant and co-trustees filed competing petitions regarding the settlement agreement that occurred in 2007. And after the liquidation provision, where it gave a time frame in terms of when it is to expire, after that time frame expired, the settlement agreement was silent as to what to do after that time period expired.
You mean the liquidation provision of the settlement agreement?
Yes. It was silent.
So what about the 18-month extension?
There was an 18-month extension, and there was three petitions filed. One petition was to extend it to 18 months, and Judge Chan asked us, well, trustees, is it likely to get a sale if we give you more time? And the trustees' response was, we don't believe so, because we're in the midst of a great recession. Economics at that point didn't look very good. And then appellant filed their petition to basically enforce the settlement agreement. And then the trustees took the position after we analyzed where we're at, that the terms of the liquidation provision expired and the 18 months wouldn't really produce any benefits for the beneficiary. We said, according to the terms of the settlement,
whose right was it to extend for 18 months under the settlement agreement?
It was in the settlement agreement to be done by petition of the court.
By petition to the court.
Yes.
Okay.
And there was a petition filed by a party to extend it. The court considered that and denied it. And so the trustees filed a petition for pro rata distribution, because under the terms of the settlement agreement, if the terms are silent, it defaults to the terms of the trust. The trust allows for pro rata distribution. Henceforth, the trustees advanced the position of a pro rata distribution, seeing that to be the most equitable thing to do at that time. And then what happened after that, it wasn't as if it was a hearing or two and then a decision was made. Judge Chan took an extraordinary effort to see this through. He met with all of the parties involved in chambers talking about what can be done. He asked the trustees to see if we could come up with a liquidation plan, which we did. We worked extensively over that period of a year to come up with a liquidation plan, trying to address all of the issues for all beneficiaries. We got appraisals. We did an extensive proposal to the court, of which the appellant objected to, and the court was left with basically deciding what to do with this issue, either enforce a settlement agreement or an agreement that really what we believe the settlement agreement has basically, in terms of where it's to go, it's already been enforced and the terms have expired. And the most logical thing to do would be to then distribute the assets pro rata, because the trustees would anticipate a fight of value if we were to liquidate things and people were unhappy as to the values that the trustees received. So the trust provides for pro rata distribution, which was approved by the court, and that's how that's the context it was placed in.
You're asking for pro rata distribution without the liquidation of the assets?
That's correct. That's a very normal thing to do in a trust administration, and it also minimizes any beneficiary conflict. You would distribute the asset in kind to the beneficiaries. So if they're a beneficiary of a third, they get the underlying asset themselves, and the trustees then do not have to sell the assets for some value to which a beneficiary will argue that the trustees didn't maximize the value.
So now, if you would, fast forward to Ms. Bronster's argument that the assets have, in fact, been liquidated, at least insofar as they relate to the matter that's before us today. And realizing that that may involve things that are outside the record, at least can you give us co-trustee's position as best you can as to whether we're now arguing about, or are we arguing about something other than the liquidation of the assets, as I gather we might be from hearing from Ms. Bronster.
That, Your Honor, there are entities involved in this administration that have not been liquidated, and the trustees want to make a pro rata distribution of those assets. And so that's where we're at with this administration.
Well, before you leave that point, Mr. Yoshitake, perhaps you could help with the position that I think is being taken, that this isn't a collateral attack, it's a direct attack, if you will, because the issue which you're describing now, having to do with whether the assets should be liquidated or distributed pro rata, that issue is a central issue in both of the judgments. The judgment pertaining to distribution, the judgment pertaining to enforcement. So if that's the case and you have an appeal at this time of this particular issue, why wouldn't it be the case that that's a direct attack rather than a collateral attack?
Well, the direct attack, as I understand it to be, is when you're attacking a judgment directly through a process. This is an indirect attack because the enforcement of the settlement agreement petition that was appealed is seeking relief that attacks the pro rata distribution order, which is final. So that's why we believe it is a collateral attack. It's not a direct attack on the distribution judgment. The direct attack would be appeal the thing.
But did her petition came first? So under the Lingle case, doesn't it, because it came first, can this be a collateral attack since her petition was filed first?
I believe it can, Your Honor. The Lingle case is a very interesting case, and we looked at it very carefully. I understand what the case says when it deals with the initial petition and the appeal. Interestingly enough, that the court was silent with respect to, did it address the issue, whether an appeal is a new proceeding? I submit to you that it did not. I submit to you also that the facts of that case lead me to believe that the case and the outcome of that case was decided on a different issue, not whether this was a new proceeding or not, but in that fact pattern, there was a arbitration. There was an award, an arbitration, and the The petitioner of the initial petition was the department, Department of the Government, and the underlying appeal of that order of the final judgment was by the second union involved in that case. So there was part, as you know, a collateral attack. You need privity of parties. You need the same parties involved. I submit to you that that was a factual distinction in that case that we do not have present in this case. And that's why it is the case is silent with respect to why they reasoned the case was a collateral attack.
Well, but, Mr. Yoshitake, I'm sorry to interrupt you. And if you want, you can complete your thought. Is there anything else you want to say?
No, I'm ready to answer your question.
Okay. Let's assume that the decision was made to appeal the judgment regarding the petition for enforcement of instructions, but the judgment granting or denying the petition to enforce wasn't. Are you suggesting that that would be barred by collateral estoppel as well because the issue in the petition for enforcement dealing with the liquidation of assets had been decided in that case as and wasn't being appealed?
I'm sorry, can you rephrase that question, please? I didn't follow.
Well, I think you're taking the position in this case that for there to be an escape from the idea of collateral attack, there would have had to been an appeal of both judgments, right? Or at least there had to be an appeal of distribution.
That would have been a direct attack, and you would not have the collateral attack issue. I agree with that.
Yeah, well, but the reason that you're claiming that there is a collateral attack here is because you're claiming that the issue of the, I guess, the issue having to do with whether to liquidate or go pro rata is an issue that was already decided in the distribution judgment, right?
That's correct.
But wasn't it also decided with respect to the judgment for enforcement?
That was denied.
Because the judgment of enforcement was focused on whether or not the assets should be liquidated or whether they should be distributed pro rata, right?
That's correct.
So the issue was the same in both petitions, at least that issue was.
I believe that's the case, correct?
Well, then I bring you back to the point, well, what if the appeal had been for the, as you're suggesting it should have been, the petition, the judgment on the petition for distribution? If the appeal had been on that side, there's an unappealed judgment that pertains to the same issue for the petition for enforcement. So wouldn't the collateral attack apply there too?
No, it wouldn't.
Why is that?
What you would have is you would have basically before this court and before the ICA now jurisdiction to consider which petition was correct. What did Judge Chan do? Did he abuse his discretion on the denial of the enforcement petition and the granting of the paretta petition?
I'd like to follow up with that. If there had been an appeal of both the enforcement and the distribution judgment, I'd like to know what issues would have been raised in the distribution judgment. What could they have possibly raised in the distribution judgment that isn't already raised in the enforcement judgment? In fact, they might even say, look, if we lose the enforcement issue, we agree, which they already have, with how it's been distributed. In other words, there's no findings in the distribution judgment to challenge, correct? So what could they challenge in the distribution? In other words, it sounds to me like a pro forma appeal that says, here, we're appealing the distribution judgment, but the only reason is because we have another appeal already going forward, and we have no new issues to argue here. But by the way, if we win that other one, then we've appealed this.
Well, it's not the same position. In the enforcement petition, they're looking to sell and force the trustees to sell the assets regardless of the price. In the distribution petition, the co-trustees requested the court, let us distribute the assets in kind pro rata to the beneficiaries so we don't have to sell it at a fire sale because we believe that the fire sale would be not in the best interest of the beneficiaries.
But that issue is entirely dependent on the enforcement.
You're saying it came up in the initial petition, right?
I'm sorry?
Did it come up in the initial petition?
Did what come up?
whether or not you had to sell, even though the market wouldn't be.
That's correct. That discussion was with Judge Chan over the course of the year that we tried to work something out on the liquidation plan. And the co-trustees tried very hard to really do what's right for the beneficiaries and have this advance, but there was objections by beneficiaries, and the judge had to decide pareto distribution or force a sale by the trustees.
So I want to ask you about the mootness issue. My understanding is the co-trustees' position is that the two judgments or that the relief being sought in the enforcement petition would be inconsistent with the relief that was granted in the distribution judgment, correct?
That's correct.
And so by not having appealed the distribution judgment, this court, in essence, or the ICA, couldn't grant the relief being sought because there's already a final judgment entered on the distribution judgment, which would be inconsistent with what they want in their petition. Is that the argument?
That's correct.
Okay, now why is it that that judgment could not be set aside in the a Rule 60 petition or the probate equivalent of Rule 36 petition? Why is that possibility not enough to lead us to believe that we can't say at this point it's moot? Because they could bring that kind of motion and ask for relief.
They could bring the motion, but they have not. They could have appealed the distribution judgment, but they did not.
So some of the assets have already been sold or liquidated. Is that correct?
That's correct.
But the distribution has not been made. Is that correct?
There have been distributions made.
Oh, okay. But have distributions been made pursuant to the settlement agreement then?
To the best of my understanding, yes.
Okay.
Does the distribution judgment have any time deadline where it says these things have to be sold by a specific date?
The distribution judgment?
Yeah. Does it say when these things have to be sold, distributed?
Yeah. No, it does not have a deadline.
It doesn't.
And have you distributed the remaining assets?
No, we have not.
Why?
Because of this appeal and the ongoing conflict of the beneficiaries involved in this case.
Okay.
So if the enforcement, if they prevail, Kiana prevails, since this doesn't have a time limit, then everything in Exhibit A that actually relates to shares, it seems like, has been sold, and everything else is percentage, which could apply to money or anything else.
Well, I submit to you, Your Honor, that there's a meaningful difference between an asset given on a pro rata basis in kind, shares of an entity, versus cash from sale proceeds. And it means different things to different beneficiaries. For example,
the judgment says remaining assets. An asset's definition includes money.
Correct. But my point is that the assets remaining are predominantly LLC interest in businesses. And in making a pro rata distribution of those assets versus selling those businesses and giving cash is a meaningful difference to the beneficiary in many levels. One level, it is a matter of control. Who controls the underlying entity? The beneficiaries who receive percentages of these entities are going to have different levels of control and involvement. And to take away the right from a pro rata distribution order that's final seems to be awfully inconsistent with finality of judgments to say that it is the same as basically a sale proceeds. And let me submit to you, Your Honor, on this as well, because the appellant has taken inconsistent positions on this. She's admitted in prior pleadings that it is in conflict. It is not the same thing through her objections on the various petitions that are in the transcripts of this court. And for her to come to say now that it's the same thing, that the sale proceeds are the same as a pro rata distribution, it doesn't disturb it. If you read the record of this case, you'll see that that's just disingenuous.
You raised the issue of control, and I assumed one of the reasons that people, beneficiaries, might object to a direct distribution was that specific issue, the fact that receiving one-third non-controlling interest in an entity may be worth much less than receiving one-third of the sale of 100% of the entity.
I agree.
So you're saying, as trustees, you're saying, as of 2010, the economy was bad, and we didn't want to have to do a fire sale.
Correct.
So therefore, our only option was to request that we just be able to distribute to everyone.
That's correct.
Instead of extending it for 18 months.
Yes, the judge asked us specifically.
And but actually what has happened that after the 18 months, soon after the 18 months, you actually did sell some of it?
We sold one property.
You did sell one property.
We sold one property, and that property was sold prior to the final judgment, prior to the final judgment of the distribution order.
Let me ask you what I asked Ms. Bronster when she was arguing. It appears that the petition to enforce settlement does also include a request for removal of trustee and appointment of a receiver.
Correct.
Would you concede that that issue would not be moot?
Your Honor, I consider that issue to be ironic. In our petition for probate distribution, we asked to resign.
Right. And the probate court denied that request, correct?
That's correct. And the reasoning is because the probate court believed that these trustees acted in the beneficiary's best interest and would be the best suited to continue the
administration. But my only question is, would you concede that the issue of whether or not the request in the petition to enforce settlement, the portion of that request to remove trustees and appoint a receiver, that issue would never be moved?
I think that issue is posturing, Your Honor. Because we already tendered our resignation.
Please respond to my question. Is the issue moot or not?
I don't believe the issue would be moot.
Thank you.
Your position has been it's been irreconcilable between the two judgments, essentially.
When you say irreconcilable,
or conflict.
Our position is that the distribution orders a probate distribution, and what is sought after in the enforcement of the settlement agreement is in conflict with the probate distribution, correct?
Did the judge have that position? Because the Chief Justice referred, I think, to the October 7th, 2011 hearing, and at the end of the hearing, the judge grants the petition that you folks requested, right?
Correct. Your Honor, one clarification, he grants in part our petition. We asked also to do other things and to also resign, but he deferred that and ultimately denied that.
But he granted the distribution.
That's correct.
But at the same time, he took the petition to enforce under advisement.
That's correct.
So he must not have thought they were this major conflict.
Well, let me suggest to Your Honor that during that period of time, we just went through an entire year of trying to work things out. Beneficiaries, the appellant beneficiary is highly objectionable to everything the trustee does, and I think that Judge Chan did a spectacular job in trying to temper the waters during the process and not say you lose out of the gate, to let the pro-rata order go on and then ultimately go for the final judgments and ultimately deny them. And I believe that that's what occurred.
I'll come back to the question I asked. Is it premature at this time for us to say that it's moot when the possibility exists that the petitioner could go to Judge Chan ultimately and seek relief from the distribution judgment?
Well, you know my opinion on the removal piece. We've tendered the resignation. You know my opinion as to the removal piece. I just think it's posturing, and if she really wants to advance that, bring it on.
Well, you're saying this is, again, my understanding is you want us to affirm the ICA, which said basically there is no jurisdiction or that the appeal should be dismissed for two reasons, collateral attack and mootness. And my understanding of the rationale on the mootness from your perspective is there's two different judgments. The judgments are inconsistent. So if we give the petitioner what they want on their petition or on their appeal, it will result in conflict with what is a final judgment. And my question to you is, and therefore it's moot, my question to you is that a premature determination to make at this point as a matter of law? Can we not or should we not defer to the probate court to decide whether to provide relief from the judgment it entered?
You can do either way, Your Honor. I think that you can remand a limited issue of the removal of the trustees. The conflict between the distribution pro rata versus mandatory sale of the asset is in direct conflict with each other, and so I think if for that limited issue, if that was what the court thought was appropriate, then then...
The relief from the judgment could be addressed in that at that
yes.
time?
I think the Chief Justice, I don't think he's focused entirely just on the issue of potential removal. I think the issue is whether or not, because the assets have not been distributed, as you've indicated, would there potentially be a Rule 36 set aside of the distribution judgment? Could there be under the law?
I don't believe there can be.
Do you think the probate court has the power to set aside its own judgment?
The rules specify if there's some sort of fraud, mistake, inadvertency, that sort of thing, all of which has never been pled or I don't believe exists. But if you want to talk theory, anything's possible according to the confines within that rule, but none of those criteria in that rule exist in this case.
How about B5, which says a prior order upon which it is based has been reversed or otherwise vacated? So that seems to indicate that there could be situations in which a related order has somehow been set aside or modified on appeal. That would be a ground for reopening another order or judgment on remand.
You can certainly go to remand.
I'm sorry?
You can certainly go to remand on the particular issues or the limited issue on the removal. And if you want to incorporate all of the issues, you can certainly go to remand. I think what you're going to get on remand is a judge saying, okay, I have a final order. I already decided that the pro-rata distribution is correct, and I'm going to deny her petition again. And we're going to be back here in 2 years after the IC gets done with it to affirm their judgment.
The trustees, the trust has not been entirely liquidated.
That's correct.
And why is that?
Because
they have a continuing duty even though the case is on appeal.
Absolutely. And the trustees have done an impeccable job in the administration of this trust. And we have been exploring different ways to resolve and ultimately end this administration, but we are met with objection after objection and appeal after appeal. This is not the only appeal that has been done in this case by the appellant.
Aren't you objecting here that there weren't more appeals?
I'm sorry?
I thought that's your big argument, that there should have been another appeal from the distribution judgment. And I just heard you complaining about the number of appeals.
No, my point on the distribution judgment is, had the appellant properly appealed the distribution judgment, then this issue of collateral attack would not exist. The court would have jurisdiction to address all issues under abuse of discretion standard. And if you look at the abuse of discretion standard, after what Judge Chan has done and lived with this case over the number of years that he's administered this, overseen this trust administration, he went through extraordinary efforts to try to make it work, and it just didn't.
Doesn't the probate court have jurisdiction to do what is just and equitable under the circumstances?
Generally speaking, yes.
Haven't the circumstances changed since your petition for distribution judgment? Wasn't that judgment based on the bad economy? Isn't it 5 years later now?
I think circumstances have changed. Assets have been sold and monies have been distributed to beneficiaries. We're dealing with operational entities that are tied to real estate. And
didn't you indicate that in terms of sale, your concern back then was a fire sale? You also alluded to control. Isn't there an issue now as to whether or not a better price could be obtained for all beneficiaries through a sale of the entire asset instead of distributing them each selling a third or whatever percentage they get?
Yes, and the trustees continue to explore all options along those matters. And the trustees have, in fact, explored those issues. And it's hard to sell a 30% interest in a closely held operating company on an
right.
open market. So we
basically
explore.
The distribution judgment is distributing things that are almost, they really don't have much worth.
That's correct.
Non-controlling interests in closely held corporations.
That's correct. And it's even worse, Your Honor, because there's one.
Then why, as trustees, would you want to do that?
Do what?
Distribute things that don't have much value instead of saying, you know what, let's go ahead and sell the whole now.
Well, because, Your Honor, they could have, if I distribute you a 30% interest now, okay, instead of selling it at some depressed discounted value, that asset can be worth a lot more in the future to you as a beneficiary and benefit you. And that's what we're looking
Assuming
at.
I can get, you know, another 21% to sell.
We're looking at very large property holdings
right.
and leveraging and real estate, building, and instead of selling it at a discounted basis now, if we were to give you a third of the underlying entity, it can be worth a lot more on an exponential basis to you 10 years, 15 years from now. We don't know.
Well, Mr. Yoshitake, the indecision when you say you don't know would seem to be something that was contemplated at the time that the settlement was reached after all the effort that you both described. So assuming that this is remanded to the ICA, determinations made on the merits, determinations made that the settlement agreement should be enforced, the assets should be sold, the equitable powers of the probate court are exercised, then you, as a trustee, would have your marching orders. The matter would be resolved, and I suppose the equitable powers of the probate court would be exercised. And so that sounds like there are a lot of lingering issues dealing with the resolution of this estate that would suggest that mootness, at least, doesn't describe the nature of the proceedings at the moment.
Well, I would respectfully disagree with you on that, Your Honor, that we believe that the remanding it back is going to get you the same result with respect to where we're at in this administration. We believe that the way to resolve
Why would that be the case if the financial conditions have changed? So Judge Chan, you described as trying very hard to come to a fair resolution, concluded that due to the financial crisis, they couldn't get a fair price. Now we're several more years down the road. Why do you assume that he wouldn't come to a different conclusion now and say, let's go back to trying to sell the properties as anticipated by the settlement agreement?
We certainly can go through that process, and we have gone through that process with respect to trying to get the assets in a position to be sold. Again, it's the issue of minority interest in closely held companies and whether it's better for the beneficiaries to receive
But wasn't
them.
That all taken into account when the settlement agreement was – I mean, these are all tough issues that presumably were taken into account by all the parties when they signed the settlement agreement, including, I believe, the co-trustees. Were they part of that agreement? Or
yes, Your Honor.
So, I mean, you're raising a lot of good issues why perhaps they shouldn't have signed the agreement because it put themselves – gave themselves tough work to do. But at this point, isn't that the agreement that was signed? Mm-hmm. And to the extent there were unforeseen circumstances that may have existed back in 2010, do those circumstances still exist? And isn't that a question ultimately for the probate court?
Right, and the probate court answered that in 2010.
But the probate court didn't, I don't want to preempt their findings, but when I look at the judgment on the enforcement, there's really no reason stated, are there?
I'm sorry?
There's no reason stated for the on the enforcement judgment.
As to the denial of the enforcement judgment?
Yes.
I don't know why there wasn't any more elaboration as to the denial, but I know that involved in the process that it was viewed that the pro rata distribution and the enforcement of the settlement agreement were in conflict with one another. And to
at this point, you indicated, you know, they haven't filed a 36 motion. Is there anything that would prohibit the co-trustees right now from going to the probate court and say, we file a petition to set aside the distribution judgment, and we would like to go back to the settlement agreement. Settlement.
One, I think if that would be in the best interest of the beneficiaries, the trustees would certainly consider that. If the trustees
are you suggesting buyer, it would it right now it's in the best interest of the beneficiaries to distribute these minority shares to them directly?
That's correct. Yeah.
You said that it was in the best interest of the beneficiaries to get the best price for the property.
It is.
But then your duty is to look at the best interest of the beneficiaries. So why would distributing a not very valued, highly valued minority share, why are you asking the court for permission to do that when you've already said it would be the best interest of the beneficiaries?
Because if we were to sell the minority shares now, we believe we'd get X amount of dollars, and if we distribute the underlying LLC interest themselves in 10 years, we think it could be worth a lot more. And so it would be in the best interest of the beneficiaries to do it pro rata.
Wouldn't it be better not to distribute them at all then and hold them for 10 years?
Well, the trust is incurring substantial costs for trustee fees, lawyer fees, accounting fees on the administration. We believe that we want to end this administration. Mr. Gentry died in 1998, and this is 2015, and we believe that this administration should have been ended, a number of years ago, but for what we consider frivolous lawsuits. So we're trying.
But basically, the beneficiaries, you're saying that it's in the beneficiaries' best interest to take distribution of minority interests that are basically not worth very much right now and wait 10 years to see if they can get together and sell a majority interest, and perhaps they can or cannot agree. But you haven't said anything about why it wouldn't be in the beneficiaries' best interest to just sell everything and then let the beneficiaries decide what they want to do with the distribution. They could reinvest it
because
into something else.
If the trustees sold all the assets now for any price, there's going to be lawsuits, Your Honor. Beneficiaries are going to argue, we didn't get enough value, you should have got a better price, you didn't do enough due diligence. This has been a contentious.
What would preclude lawsuits now based on the positions you've taken now? What would preclude that?
Well, we have a pro rata distribution order. We're waiting for final judgment in this matter to make the final pro rata distribution of these underlying assets.
But isn't that a certain comfort level for the co-trustees? If you have a court order that orders a certain treatment of the assets, doesn't that provide you with a certain amount of, if you will, reasonable justification for your actions in a later lawsuit, that there was a court order that ordered that disposition of the assets?
That would certainly give some comfort, Your Honor. This is a highly contentious administration. As Chief Justice pointed out, there are exceptions to finality of judgments, and I believe that the trustees are administering very prudently to try to conclude this administration so there's no open holes.
Anything to wrap up, Mr. Yoshitake, before we hear on Ms. Bronster's rebuttal?
Well, I actually had a lot on my prepared statement that I didn't really go through, but I will relent to Ms. Bronster and let her wrap it up. I know that we're short on time now.
Okay. Very well. Thank you. Ms. Bronster.
First, let me address the issue of the probate court's ability to set aside the order. While we don't believe it's necessary to allow Kiana's petition to get decided and enforced, and the settlement agreement enforced, there are two bases under Rule 36 under which the court could set aside the judgment. One is under B5, which talks about the order's been satisfied, released, etc., or it is no longer equitable that the order should have prospective application. And the other provision would be 36B6, any other reason justifying relief from the operation of the order. And of course, the probate court is a court of equity. With respect to, I was troubled by a couple of things that Mr. Yoshitake said. And one of which was that the trustees want to sell other or distribute other assets on a pro rata basis. And I think that it's important. That's why I started out by saying you have to remember what this case is about and what it's not about. There is a separate appeal going on with respect to the marital trust that is not this one. So if you look at the sheet that I gave you earlier, you can see that there are other assets in the marital trust that are not in this trust and were not the subject of the distribution judgment. So if you look at the distribution judgment itself, it refers to the petition and it granted paragraphs B and D. And paragraph B specifically set out what entities were to be distributed. The only two entities that they asked the probate court to give them the right to distribute were Gentry Pacific, which now only has cash in it, and Gentry Properties, which, as I said, is no longer. So to suggest that this judgment allows them to simply distribute all of the other operating companies,
so the distribution judgment only affected the trust assets.
Correct.
And so the settlement agreement encompassed the trust assets, the marital trust, and the estate?
Yes. So I think that it's improper to suggest that this judgment gives them more rights. But I would...
I'd ask this, but just to confirm, the only property that is actually where there's shares on Exhibit A has to do with Gentry Pacific. Everything else is pro rata percentage.
Correct. And those were not, the real estate assets, Antioch, et cetera, those were not the subject of the paragraphs that, of the settlement agreement. And then I would say that it is important to remember that after litigating for a long, long time, the reason that we entered into the settlement was to avoid having to be involved with all of the other beneficiaries forevermore, which is what the distribution in kind forces. So Kiana, the whole purpose of Kiana settling was to say, okay, I'll take the money in cash and invest it separately.
I want to make sure I understand this. The distribution judgment has nothing to do with the marital trust and the estate. Is that correct?
That's correct.
But the trustees are arguing that failure to appeal the distribution judgment is fatal.
Correct.
To the settlement, because the settlement agreement encompasses not just the trust, but also the marital trust and the estate.
Correct. And we have a separate appeal currently pending before the ICA on the marital trust and the marital trust assets. And there was no distribution judgment in the marital trust.
I wonder if you had appealed the distribution judgment, whether there had been a motion to dismiss the appeal, because you're not raising any issues there that weren't raised in the settlement.
That's I think, correct. And I think that had the court looked at it, because the petition to enforce came first and it was after a long period, there's a very strong argument that the whole distribution judgment was a collateral attack on the settlement agreement. But I would also point out that the settlement agreement has very specific provisions on timing and on what's supposed to happen or what was supposed to have happened that are not moot and have not been met. And I give you just one example, one more example other than the removal. In 6B, it says, when Gentry property assets are sold and the entity is liquidated, which Mr. Yoshitake has admitted has happened, and all expenses associated with Gentry properties are paid, Gentry Pacific will make a dividend distribution of all of its cash to the shareholders of Gentry Pacific. And so the petition to enforce would seek to have the trustees follow through with that.
I thought a representation was made that the distributions had been made.
No. No, I think Mr. Yoshitake was quite careful by saying some distributions, but not that distribution. And there are further distributions. It says the proceeds from the sale of entities or assets will be distributed to the trusts promptly. These were all things that we all agreed to. And so these are all things that Kiana is entitled to enforce. So to take the ICA's ruling and state that Kiana has no ability to enforce that settlement agreement without any reasons is...
Well, the reason was a failure to appeal the other judgment.
And No, below. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, below. Judge Chan in the probate court did not give any reasons for stating why he was denying the petition to enforce. And at that time, there was no there was no distribution judgment entered or final. And as the court suggested earlier, I think the Lingle case is absolutely critical because it makes it clear that you look at the issue when the original petition is brought, not on appeal. We could not find a single case in which somehow or other an appeal ends up, an appeal of a legitimate case that was not a collateral attack below could possibly become a collateral attack later. And that's precisely what the co-trustees are trying to argue, that somehow it became a collateral attack because of things that they had done. And it took away Kiana's right to enforce a settlement agreement that was extremely hard fought and involved a lot of compromises.
You're talking about something that was done subsequent to the entry of the judgment on the enforcement. The judgment that denied the enforcement.
Right, but, yeah. the petition, the initial petition was well before the trustees came up with their distribution order. And we don't believe that the ICA would ever have ruled the way it did if they had known that the assets, and we're talking about the assets that are the subject of this, of the distribution petition. The only two corporations are not inconsistent with the provisions in the settlement agreement. There are very specific provisions on what's supposed to happen with Gentry Properties and Gentry Pacific, and there's nothing inconsistent about them if you take a look at what's actually happening. So I think the idea that the probate court could simply ignore the settlement agreement, we believe was improper because this was something that was agreed to, approved by the court. It was approved by all the beneficiaries and the trustees. So the idea that it could simply be thrown out and suddenly we'd be going back to getting pro rata shares of other entities based on that ruling, which only deals with those two corporations. It doesn't deal with any others. Seems beyond the scope of the judgment, which is another reason why the collateral attack doctrine simply doesn't apply. And it cannot be used, that judgment cannot be used to throw out the rest of the settlement because it was a very narrow request on two entities that were sold anyway.
Anything further at this time, Ms. Bronster?
No, Your Honor. We just believe that the petition was, Kiana's petition was properly brought, and we believe that she should have the ability, despite whatever the distribution judgment said, to seek to enforce the settlement agreement on all of its terms, even if the one piece would be moot. But the rest of it, we believe, we don't believe any of it's moot.
Which is the one piece you're referring to?
If somehow the distribution judgment applied to the Gentry Pacific. But given the facts, I mean, it's impossible since the trustees have already sold that and liquidated the other corporations.
Very well. Thank you very much for your argument. Thank you to both of our counsel here today. The court will take this matter under advisement.